problem meeting future baseline.
We're going to, we should and continue and plan to continue it to expect changes in regulations to change the way we think about water and use water. And we've made great strides over the years, but we still have some room for improvement.
And then some of the new development that's going in, the landscape is actually plumbed for future connection to recycled water. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then last one. So like here, we're approving our, you know, municipal water plan, right? But we are part of a larger basin. Overall, how much of the total basin does the city pump in the basin's amount of groundwater?
Typically, the city's pumping about 1,000 acre feet from the basin. That has an estimated perennial yield of about 60,000 acre feet per year.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Maureen, you might, or I'm not sure if you can address this, but I know that there's new regulations coming down from SGMA with regard to decorative grass. You might explain to the public that that's coming, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's what Christopher just mentioned. The decorative grass is non-functional turf, is what it's called.
Right.
And in areas like Palm Springs, a desert that has a lot of non-functional turf, it's going to have a big effect in water demand. Here it'll have an effect, but not nearly as big night and day as in Palm Springs. That is part of the water conservation as a way of life legislation, and it's going to be, yeah, it's coming.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Pro-Tem Gregory.
Yes. I think it's on the next slide. You have a per capita, that one. So the reason for the increase on the use per capita, is that because of industrial uses increasing in the city?
I'm not 100% sure on why it's increasing.
Because, you know, we were way up and we got it down, and
yeah,
it looks like it's creeping.
I can speak to that, and that is true, Councilmember Gregory. It's a change in the relative mix of residential and commercial.
Okay.
And I also want to point out that these estimates in the urban plan are very conservative. When we do our water resource planning, we're looking at kind of historically, what have we seen as our higher level demands? What we're trying to do here is demonstrate that even kind of under the high demand conditions in the city, that we'll have adequate water supplies to provide for the community through build out. Are we going to hit 94, 51? Probably not, but you know, based upon past use, we could potentially. And if we were to hit that number, we're just showing that we've got adequate supplies to meet it.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, and some of those changes with the non-functional turf will reduce that per capita demand.
Okay. Thank you very much for the answer.
Councilman Bausch.
Can you clarify the non-functional turf? That's going to start with commercial. Is there any plans for residential?
Christopher, do you want to take that one on how it's implemented here?
Yeah, that's going to be the case. I don't know the timelines off the top of my head. Kirk is working on that and pushing that forward for the city. But yeah, it's going to start with commercial. That's going to be the first rollout, and then following that, we're going to see restrictions on you know, broader restrictions throughout the city.
And in other basins that I've worked in, it starts with new development, right? You're not going to take out your front yard, but new
right.
developments that come in will have restrictions on the amount of irrigated area. As I mentioned, in Palm Springs, they have a lot of grant funding to help people turn in their turf yard into a more drought-tolerant landscape.
What, on the commercial side, what we're seeing, I mean, what I've read about it, it's like hotels that have decorative lawns, those will be asked to remove the decorative lawns. How kind of an impact does that have on, say, a golf course?
So golf course, most of a golf course is functional.
Right.
It's just the ornamental area that might have to be changed to be more drought-tolerant, not, you know, heavy intensive turf use, but maybe natural grasses that don't need as much irrigation.
And then something like a winery that uses their lawn for reception area or events, things like that. Does that become functional?
That's a good question. I would guess
that is functional.
Yeah,
yes.
Functional.
Awesome. Thank you.
I think it's just the front yard, the green area in front of the hotel that nobody ever uses.
Councilman Strong.
The dog. Yes. Can I assume that also applies to sports fields, such as...
Those are functional. So a soccer field that uses turf, that is allowed.
Thank you.
doesn't the building code already, I think on new construction, Christopher, that there's only like 25% can be in turf?
It's the model landscape.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, you can, go ahead.
Yeah, the model landscape ordinance that the city has adopted outlines all those existing restrictions, and you are correct.
Right. That's what I remember a few years ago they were doing that.
Yeah, they've made it smaller and smaller, and now it's going to completely be no turf, but again, other vegetation that just uses less water, I think, is allowed.
Or artificial turf, too. You can do that.
Yeah, artificial turf.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Palm Springs is going artificial.
Okay, any other questions from council? Okay, we'll open up then to the public for any questions on the item, please. Dale, welcome.
Dale Augustin. A couple of things I don't understand. I heard her saying we're using recycled water to meet this goal, and we're using nasty mineral water to meet this goal. And my understanding is we're not really using either one of those up to the full potential. Why not? If we're meeting our demands, why are we being asked to pay into this water district thing for the city when we're not causing the problem? I don't think that's right. And I know John Hammond sits on that board, so I wish you'd bring that up, Mr. Hammond.
Yeah. Short answer on that is we live in California, Dale. Yeah.
Short answer is what?
Short answer is that we all live in California, and they're the ones telling us what we have to do with our water. That's always been the rub with me. So even though we have plenty of water, we're told how we can use it. All right.
Really are not going to have them in the future. We're moving to modular, we're moving to ADUs, we're moving to all kinds of different buildings. So, and in these buildings, people are doubling up. I already feel like I pay too much for water. I pay $45 a month for water, and I'm one person. So I don't know why the state calculates it, including commercial. Because then my natural inclination, not knowing much about this, or not wanting to, frankly, is then why am I paying for the hotels? We have a new hotel coming in District 1. People are not happy because we're building hotels that have water demands, and we need housing instead. That's my question. Why is it being calculated on single-family homes, and what's going to be the future trend to calculate them?
Thank you. Welcome.
Gloria Fama, 1211 Dorothy Street. The people in Gilroy have kind of come up with arms because the city okayed data center outside of Gilroy. You may have heard it takes an enormous amount of water. So it concerns me that it doesn't look like we're planning for such events. Anybody can speak to that?
No, for the tremendous
use. We'll try to get an answer for you, ma'am.
Just on the data center point, if a new data center is proposed here, then that's what triggers the water supply assessment. If there are any changes to the general plan, additional water use is calculated and considered against the water supply. So you'd have an opportunity at that point to look at the demand of a water data center and the needs of the city. So that's not built into this project because, as far as I know, there's no data centers in the general plan. To answer the question about how it's calculated, the single-family home was just an example to give you an idea what an acre foot is. The calculation is based on per capita, and that's not how your water rates are calculated. Your water rates are calculated based on your usage. This is just the per capita demand of the city. It's a shortcut to figure out the average overall and how to work in commercial and industrial in that one number. But your rates would be separate.
Okay. Any other questions online?
No, sir.
Okay. We'll go ahead and then bring it back to council for a direction and or action. Councilman Strong.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment. I have friends live in various parts of the state, and when I talk to them, and I talk to them on this topic, I am absolutely amazed at what they're being charged for their water. One of my friends lives up in Sonoma County, up near Santa Rosa. Their water bill for using about as much water as I'm using in an 800 and some square foot unit is $400 a month. And it's amazing how much other people are paying for their water because they don't have the supply we have. And I think that our people should check it out and see how we compare to other areas before they get too concerned about our rates right now.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, before we proceed, just for the clerk's reference, we did close the public hearing prior to Mr. Strong's comments.
Is that what you were trying to get me for?
Mayor, actually, I just wanted to follow up real quick on the data center question, if I may. Just to clarify, the city does not have any prospective or proposed data centers at this time. As mentioned, should one of those data centers, I know they're the hot topic right now, should one be proposed, our development process would offer the opportunity for analysis and hearings and some checks and balances before one of those proposals could move forward. So this plan is somewhat distinct and separate from an analysis of a data center.
Okay. Further comment or direction?
I'd like to make a motion.
Pro Tem Gregory.
That we approve Resolution 26XXX, adopting the water shortage contingency plan, and Resolution 26XXX, adopting the 2025 urban water management plan.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion on the item. Call for the question, Mary.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. So item 3, we'll open up the public hearing, proposed formation of community facilities district number 2026-1, Beechwood facilities to provide transportation facilities, park recreational improvements and facilities, parkway and landscape improvements, public safety facilities, including police. Ryan Cornell, you have that item.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council. Ryan Cornell, Administrative Services Director. I thank you for this opportunity to present to you our next step in CFD formations. This one has to do with the Beechwood specific plan area. A little bit of a background, the Beechwood specific plan area is in the southeastern portion of the city, just south of Olson, South Chandler Ranch. It includes about 911 residential units. The project was approved by City Council back in 2020, and since that time we've been kind of working to get development plans in and secured and entitlements and the like. When this specific plan was approved, there was a fiscal impact study that was conducted to make sure that there weren't any adverse impacts to the current residents of the community with this development. As such, we did already establish a services CFD. That one's already done and done with. That was done in 2022. And so now what we're doing is doing a facilities portion on a couple planning improvement areas within this development. This is just step one. We still have three other steps to go through. So on the right-hand side, it's a little bit more zoomed-in version of the specific plan area, but it does propose two improvement areas, one in the north eastern portion and one south. Both of them are going to have the same tax burden in the improvement areas. So just as a little bit of a range for the smallest house that's less than 1,500 square feet, the annual tax is estimated to be $3,699. And then for the largest size house of more than 2,500 square feet, the annual tax is $5,985. These are taxes over and beyond what is normally on property taxes. What this will do is it'll authorize bond authorization in the neighborhood of $15 million for each of those improvement areas. Beechwood facility CFD does fall under the City Council local goals and priorities. With Olsa South Chandler, we had a development agreement that kind of had some additional provisions versus Beechwood. We are solely relying on the local goals and policies. So what does that mean is that the city have priorities of what the bonds can reimburse developers for. The first one is city services. We want to make sure that the city is able to maintain services. Like I said, that was already done in 2022. The next priority is public facilities. So those are the off-site improvements, the traffic circulation related ones, lift stations, pump stations, recycled water, kind of the infrastructure utilities. That is the city's first priority for bond reimbursements. The third priority is private facilities. So those are all in-track related utilities, in-track roads, not necessarily arterial roadways. On the bond, the other piece of it is bond limitations. And so, one, we're limited to the bond tax amount that I just showed you on the prior screen. But there's also this value to lien ratio. What happens is we don't want these properties to be overburdened with debt. And so we require a 4-to-1. So this means if they're going to pull out $15 million, they need to have $60 million worth of value in that land before we'll authorize $15 million. This just kind of keeps that ratio kind of within a good balance. The other important piece of it is the debt payments aren't escalating. So that means this tax is going to stay flat. So once we establish it, it's going to stay flat for the 35-year term. And then with the local goals and policies, we try to eye about a 1.8% effective tax rate. It's an about because the facilities tax is flat and the value of the house fluctuates and goes up and down. So we really don't know how that's going to predict. But that's our goal, is to get to about 1.8. Prop 13 is a 1%, so we're looking at almost close to double that. So like I said, there's several steps involved. This is just the initiation to form the CFD and to authorize incurred debt. Our very next council meeting on July 21st is going to be the formal scripted Mr. Mayor dialogue where we're calling elections, we're declaring election results, and then we're introducing for first reading the new tax levy. On August 4th, we'll do it on consent. We'll just throw this item on for a second reading. And then sometime in the future, we will come back to city councils for bond authorizations when the developer is ready. That could be one issuance. It could be multiple issuance. We're not kind of unsure right now. It depends on how development instructs. That concludes my presentation. Mr. Mayor, we have two actions before you tonight. The first one is to establish the CFD for facilities, and the second one is to declare necessity to incur bond indebtedness. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Ryan. Questions of Ryan? Councilman Bausch.
Nice presentation, short and to the point. The 4-to-1 ratio, does that take into account the other bonds that are going to be assessed, like the school district bonds and the Cuesta bonds, things like that?
So the 1.8 effective tax rate does take in consideration 1.8. All the other add-on
okay.
bonds.
That makes sense. Yeah. And then any other bonds that might come about as a result of this development? Or is this kind of a one and done? Or there might be something else.
So as I showed you, the boundary map, it's only improvements area 1 and 2 that we right. identified. There are many owners in this specific plan area. So yes, one of them could request another facility CFD on their ownership
on
portion.
Their
on their portion. Regardless, no matter which way, there has to be a vote taken, and 100% of the voters have to approve the tax.
So I'm more concerned about it's kind of a proposed bond. Offhand, I can't think of why they would do, but somebody could get creative, and not just on these parcels, but on the entire development out there. And you don't see that happening.
No, that's incorrect. The embodied indebtedness actually stays with the community's facilities district, and it's not a citywide.
No. I just the new development that's going on out there. So it's just per development is what I'm hearing. These two parcels.
Yes. Well, planning areas.
They're planning areas. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Ryan.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah. So, Ryan, this is almost identical to what we did with Olson, correct?
Correct.
same kind of limitation?
Yeah, it's actually more restricted, to be honest with you. Yeah,
like
they had a 1.9 overall effective tax rate, and they had a couple of little different parameters, but this one's staying within the local goals and policies.
Very good. Thank you.
Councilmember Beal.
Is the 4-to-1 ratio, that's a Paso City Council policy that we've set?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, all the questions of council. We'll open it up then to public for any questions of this item. Seeing none, anybody online, Mary?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing and bring it back to council for direction and or action.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a
recommendation.
I move that we approve resolution 26XXXA, declaring intention to establish proposed community facilities district number 2026-1, Beechwood facilities, and to designate two improvement areas therein and to levy a special tax therein.
Second.
So we have a motion by Gregory, second by Bausch, or was it Strong? I'm not sure.
Either one.
Okay, we'll do the next one. We have two motions here. Go ahead. All right, discussion. All right, call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
I move that we approve resolution 26XXXB, declaring necessity to incur a bonded indebtedness of proposed city of Paso Robles Community Facilities District number 2026-1, Beechwood facilities for improvement areas number 1 and 2 therein.
Second.
Motion by Gregory, second by Strong. Any discussion? Call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Very good. That'll close the public hearing section. Moving on to discussion items. First item is approval of resolution authorizing the submission of an encampment resolution grant funding grant application, and Ashley Hernandez has that for us.
Good evening, Mayor Hammond and members of the City Council. Ashley Hernandez, Homeless Services Manager. Tonight, I'm joined by our Community Services Director, Angelica Fortin, and by two of our key grant partners, Christy Alicorn, Director of Housing Management at HASLO, the Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo County, and Wendy Lewis, President and CEO of ECHO, El Camino Homeless Organization. Christy and Wendy will each have a brief opportunity to speak later in tonight's discussion, and I'll bring us to a close. So I want to begin with the action in front of you tonight. Staff recommends approval of the resolution authorizing the Community Services Director to submit an encampment resolution funding application and execute all related documents. This is an authorization to apply. It is not a commitment to a project nor an expenditure of city funds. If the grant is awarded, updates will come back to the City Council for separate time. The application is due June 30th, 2 weeks from today, and your support will help strengthen our application. This application implements three commitments City Council has already made. Goal number 3 of the City Council adopted goals identifies housing and homelessness as a priority, specifically calling for expanded affordable housing. The strategic plan to address homelessness adopted through a community-driven process identifies outreach, interim housing, permanent housing, and system coordination as the core framework. And the SLO Regional Homelessness and Affordable Housing Compact, approved by Council in April, was designed to strengthen our competitiveness for grant funding. So tonight is the first direct opportunity throughout the county to put that compact to work. So the funding opportunity, IRF Round 5, is administered by the California Interagency Council on Homelessness. It is a Housing First competitive grant. $93 million is available statewide, and we are requesting approximately $12 to $14 million, and no local match is required. Eligible uses include outreach and engagement, case management, interim housing, permanent housing acquisition, and encampment closure. Our proposal draws on all of these. The expenditure deadline is fiscal year 2930, giving us a realistic and achievable runway to deliver lasting results. Before I walk through the strategy, I do want to thank our very committed community partners because it will exemplify to HCD what Paso is bringing forward. We have letters of support from Senator John Laird, Assemblywoman Dawn Addis, U.S. Representative Jimmy Panetta, the SLO County Sheriff's Office, California Highway Patrol, Caltrans, the County Supervisor John Pashong, Paso Robles Rotary, and a broad coalition of North County Homelessness Network service providers and community agencies. So regional collaboration is a scored criteria of the IRF application. So every partner on this slide strengthens our score, and this represents months and months of coordination and general regional commitment to addressing what is happening within Paso Robles. There is evidence to why we believe our application is extremely competitive. The single most significant factor is the right-of-way set aside. HCD has reserved 50% of IRF Round 5 funds specifically for encampments in state right-of-way. We chose the North Salinas Riverbed because it sits in Caltrans right-of-way adjacent to the 101-46 interchange, and we are competing in a smaller pool with a project that qualifies directly. Second is readiness. The Moose Apartments at 2548 Spring Street are under construction, so HCD can fund something that will be move-in ready, according to Haslow, within 7 to 8 months of grant application. Third, our partnership is coordinated. Haslow, ECHO, Caltrans, CHP, the County of SLO, and our Community Action Team are all committed before the application is even filed. And then fourth, our application in the regional compact approved 2 months ago directly demonstrates that we are working not in a silo, but a part of a system. So our strategy is built around four steps called a housing continuum. It is step one, engage. So we will begin with every individual in our encampment zone, the North Salinas Riverbed, to conduct standardized assessments and enroll participants in the coordinated entry system. This will allow them to stabilize at ECHO's Navigation Center that would be at 1134 Black Oak Drive and will become an area for expansive case management where it would be linking people to dedicated shelter beds within ECHO's 90-day program, case management, and benefits enrollment. Step three is permanent housing, which placements draw from multiple pipelines. They could get set into the home key units, housing vantage vouchers administered through Haslow, coordinated entry matches across our county, family reunification, and then families would be eligible once the acquisition of the partially constructed Moose Apartments would be used, where 7 family-sized permanent supportive housing units would be completed through this grant. Step four is the close of the project. So the sequencing of closing the North Riverbed is within our discretion as the grantee. That would definitely be in collaboration with the police department, and it would be paired with active monitoring to prevent reestablishment. So our overarching goal by December 2029 is to have offered housing navigation services to at a minimum of 75 people while permanently resolving one of the highest impact encampments within San Luis Obispo County. So on the ECHO slide, grant funds will be used to expand the Navigation Center services on the existing campus of 1134 Black Oak Drive. A prefab structure will be installed in the existing courtyard. This expansion allows ECHO to better serve our residents, and beds within ECHO's 90-day program will be specifically allocated to participants exiting the riverbed. On the Haslow side, IRF funds will be completing the Moose Apartments, bringing 7 permanent supportive units online for families. And as families move from the Home Key, which is above campus, the Home Key campus, into the newly completed Moose Apartments, that frees up units at the Home Key side for additional participants moving through the system. It creates a throughput. Each housing placement opens a door for the next person, so that pipeline is what makes this model sustainable and efficient over the grant period. The total request is approximately $12 million allocated across 3 categories: development, operations, and administration. So at this point, I'd like to bring our partners. Both Christy and Wendy are here tonight. Christy Alicorn is the Director of Housing Management at Haslow. I'll turn it over to Christy to speak to Haslow's experience and permanent housing components of the project. Michelle, sorry.
We made a change. So I'm Michelle Pedigo. I'm the Executive Director of the Housing Authority. So thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Encampment Response Funding Grant. Haslow has a long-standing track record of developing, operating, and managing permanent supportive housing throughout San Luis Obispo County. Our model combines affordable housing with intensive supportive services that help residents maintain housing and improve overall quality of life. We are seeking approximately 70% of the total grant application to support new permanent supportive housing in Paso Robles. The majority of those funds, approximately 80%, would be utilized for development and construction costs, with the remaining 20% supporting long-term operations, property management, and supportive services infrastructure necessary to ensure long-term housing stability. We recognize that communities often have concerns regarding permanent supportive housing in their community. I want to emphasize that this project is designed to be part of a broader housing continuum rather than simply adding residents into units. The intent is for residents who are currently living successfully at Paso Honki and who have demonstrated housing stability for a year or more to transition into the Moose Apartments. By creating that next step in the housing continuum, we free up units at Paso Honki for individuals who are currently unsheltered, including those transitioning from the riverbed. This approach allows us to serve more people with the same housing resources while promoting positive resident progression and long-term housing success. The project is expected to create 7 permanent supportive housing units and permanently house 7 households once fully occupied. ERF funding represents a critical opportunity to leverage state resources to address homelessness locally while creating a lasting community asset that will serve Paso Robles residents. And we're available for any questions after.
Thank you. Wendy?
Good evening, Council. Thank you for this opportunity. Wendy Lewis with El Camino Homeless Organization. First, I would love to thank both the city and the Housing Authority of SLO County for coming together and really looking at ways to bring solutions to the topic of homelessness within our community. We know that there is more for all of us to do, and this is a great partnership coming together to bring solutions. The ECHO component of this is to really provide enhanced services, especially to the people we're serving. We, at the our side of the ECHO Home Key, we are literally out of every bit of space. If you've come out for a tour, you can see that every space is utilized, but we know there's more to do, especially targeting this particular encampment and bringing solutions to encampments in the Salinas Riverbed. So ours would be to build either a 1 or 2 story building right where our meal program happens right now. So every evening, the community comes together, incredible partners from the community, from churches to service groups. They serve a meal out of that very humble bistro tent. We would love to be able to build this building, which would offer us an ability to provide those services in inclement weather, get our incredible clients, our meal teams out of the heat, the cold, the rain, and have an area. It would also include a commercial kitchen, which would come approved through the fire department and sprinklered and all the things we need to do, plus giving us more space for navigation services. We offer about 20 programs out of ECHO, and literally the space to do that is a very small, tiny conference room. This would give us the ability to offer more programming, enhanced programming, and also case management and expansion of our outreach case management services, particularly targeting that encampment on near the sewer plant in that area. So we're here just to be part of the solution and just really grateful for the partnership that's coming together to make this possible. Thank you.
So thank you both. We have what I believe a very competitive grant, and the site is pretty much ready. So we are, with that combination, it's uncommon, and the deadline is 2 weeks away. So staff recommends council approve the resolution authorizing the community services director to submit the IRF round 5 application and execute all documents necessary to apply for, accept, and administer the grant. And Halika, Christy, Wendy, and I are happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ashley. I'll start off with Pro Tem Gregory.
Sure. So I have a question, and Ashley, I don't know who's going to answer the question, but a constituent called me and asked me about how the financing works. So that was explained pretty well. They're concerned about the long-term administration and staffing for that. So does Haslow get funding from other sources, or is this enough money to run it for 5 years? Can you help us understand that?
I'll let Michelle answer.
Okay, thank you.
So part of our funding ask is operating subsidy for the first 2 or 3 years. And the reason for that is because we try to stretch our housing choice voucher budget as far as we can. But we do have set aside vouchers that go to the people who are in Paso Home Key. So as they move on over to this site, because those are tenant-based vouchers and stay with the tenant, not with the property, they'll bring those with them to the Moose Apartments. And so that will help us fund the
Very
operations.
Good. Yes, we like your program's great. So I just want to say thank you for that and thanks for the explanation.
Thank you. Councilman Bausch.
Thank you. Actually, great presentation, and thank you, Wendy and Christy. The question I have, similar to Councilmember Gregory, these are great ideas and kind of leveraging what Home Key is about, moving them, those residents into the Moose Apartments. Is it restricted to just the Moose Apartments? In other words, if the Moose Apartments get filled up, would Haslow then be able to provide vouchers for someone to move if there was space available to another location?
I can answer part of that question, then I'll pass it over to Michelle. The participants will be entered into the countywide coordinated entry system, which allows them to have a assessment and be eligible for anywhere across the county, including the Home Key, the Moose Apartments, but other places as well. And then I'll pass it over to Michelle to talk specific about Haslow.
So one of the reasons the Paso Home Key site has been so successful is because we do have those vouchers set aside.
Right.
So every time somebody decides they've, you know, ready to move on to more you know, different type of housing, they take that voucher with them. So the majority of the people who have left that property have taken it into market housing.
Interesting.
So it's been really successful in that regard, that they have a step to go. The problem is that there's always kind of like that middle ground where this will kind of serve the people who still need some services, aren't quite ready to go out into the market with their voucher, but this will kind of help them work their way up and then make more room in Paso Home Key for those who are just coming out directly from homelessness.
And then actually coming back to what Councilmember Gregory said, so we have financing through that has to be expended through 2029. What's the vision beyond 2029, assuming this is going to be highly successful? How do we sustain this and make it continue?
Can you repeat that for me?
How do we continue the funding beyond 2029 or keep the operation going? Because this is several partners involved in this. Anybody have a crystal ball that goes out beyond 2029? And is this something that the city is going to be asked to sustain or maintain?
So sustaining operations has been the biggest a question mark from the day that the opportunity to look at Home Key came available. Our portion only came with 2 years of operating, and so as an organization we took a huge leap of faith, because you don't want to build something and then have to close it 2 years later. And we showed through a lot of different partnerships, through the city as one of them, but also the community. I mean, the community stepped up. The community of Paso Robles was there. They were there to form these meal teams that are dedicated, serving dinners up to 120, 150. We know that power of that group of people will help us as well. I think we have a current project in Atascadero. It was a $6 million capital campaign to build a family wing dedicated, adding 30 beds. We're almost to 80% of that goal. And so we truly have a track record with the data we provide, the numbers of people getting back into housing. This year, as of this morning, we've helped 151 individuals or families into stable permanent housing. So all those different pieces really provide the pathway to fundraise and raise money to sustain.
So let me ask this a different way. The $12 million grant, if we're successful in being approved, that's going to be kind of a one-time funding? Is this how it's envisioned?
Yeah, it's one-time state funding to help build the operations, but it would be up to the county and the partners to sustain the operations of
okay.
In addition to that, The county has written a letter of support. Linda Belch, the deputy director, isn't able to be here, but they also are committed to helping us find continued funding in the future.
Excellent. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you.
Councilmember Beal.
Super presentation. This is very exciting for me. Has the city of Paso Robles ever put in a grant application like this before?
Not to my knowledge, but it's unique.
Well, no, but you're not the city.
Oh.
So the city hasn't been like a grant.
Oh. Yeah, this is the first time for IRF. So San Luis Obispo City does have IRF funds. They did just open the Welcome Home Village, but that was through the county as the primary applicant. This is the first time in our county that the city would be an applicant for this level of funding.
Right. And just to, you know, explain to the community, the city's role in this is to be the applicant, to be sort of the coordinator, the administrator of the grant. Maybe you can just talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, through oversight, so ensuring that the people that are entering into the system, our community action team would be the biggest partner in spending the couple of last years in the riverbed. They know every person by name, so we'd really lean on them to help us know who is going to move through that pipeline. In addition to that, just grant management, so making sure we are being good stewards of the state dollars and making sure that our partners are holding up to their roles and responsibilities through convening and then leveraging all of our community support. So whoever wants to jump on and support us, we're happy to put a place at our table.
I just think this is an excellent example of how powerful having a homelessness coordinator is in advancing the work. We could not have put together this grant application without you. And also it speaks to the relationships that you've built over the last year to make this happen quickly. Right. This was a very, it is not a simple thing to get these different government and nonprofit partners together to agree on a project, to have their boards sign off on it, to submit an application, not to mention the letters of support that you've gotten. So again, clear strategic goals that the council and the community have set, a very talented manager here looking over this work and developing the relationships, the great partners. Without any of that, we couldn't have done this, because I know you only found out about this, what, about 2 seconds ago?
Yeah. Yeah, so Haslow and Echo have been ambitious partners in this vision, and it has taken some really hefty goals to get it forward, even especially working with the property owner. So it's been a team effort for sure.
And it's you know, sometimes like these projects, they like address one piece of the continuum, but we had a very unusual situation here and an unusual opportunity to open up some more beds and in a particular kind of demographic, which then keeps the system moving. And that is really the point, to keep people moving through the system. So congratulations, Ashley, her boss on Helica, all of the partners, well done.
If I could just comment, so the city actually has applied for IRF grants before, but it was under the county, and at that time we didn't receive the grant, and one of the primary reasons is that there was no path to permanent supportive housing. So this particular opportunity, and by the city taking the lead, we were really able to address that within this application, and so we're really happy because now that is actually the strength of our application. Well, yeah. Thank you, Ashley.
Okay, any other questions from council? We'll open up then to public. Anybody wishing to address this item, please come forward.
Hi, Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. I'm kind of a little annoyed. You guys do realize what they're asking for, right? $12 million, Haslow wants 70%, which leaves us, what, approximately with $8 million. This is a city grant, and the county's coming in to take our money. I hope you see that perspective that I do. This is a city grant. This city grant could have gone completely to us and solved our 130 homeless in the riverbed. Okay, my next question is, why are all the housing going on Spring Street? You guys don't live in that neighborhood. I do. I live with the farm workers, the cockroaches, the homeless, all of it. So why are we concentrating more potential problems? And why aren't we using this money to do a safe parking spot and things like that, things that the city can use? So I want you guys to understand what the county's asking. They're asking for us to pay for them. Now, I understand that the county just got $20 million or something like that dollars from the state. Well, what did the city get from that? Where was Pechong? Where did we get from that $20 million? So I just want to make sure everybody in this room understands the county is taking this money. It's a great idea. I'm not knocking it. Okay, don't get me wrong. But we're giving $8 million to the county. And it's not housing the people that we're trying to concentrate on. These are all great concepts, don't get me wrong. But the one thing that they're not addressing and is the barriers to housing. You got people with bad credit, warrants, I can't even think of all the things right now. So I saw Rebecca Hull the other day. She looked like a cat chewed her up and spit her out again. She needs to be on SSI. I talked to her. She said, yeah, she's ready to go. Okay, but this is my district. This is District 1. We already have all the homeless at Black Oak, and now you guys are putting apartment complexes along Spring Street. Let me remind you, I've been to your neighborhoods. There is no other neighborhood like mine. Okay, I live there. You don't know what it's like to live with 12 people in an RV and things like that. So when you guys are planning these things, please don't pick on one area. It would be great to have housing somewhere else. But 90,000 Echo just collected, 90,000, yet we pay her 444K. We need to do some hard math audit. I object to the county taking our money.
Dale.
Dale Gustin, I have had acquaintances who were in the river. In fact, one of them died in the river, sadly. The concern I have is that I know Echo has programs to help people with drug addiction or psychological problems, but I didn't understand that this grant was going to help those aspects of the doing that, so I'd like to some assurance that most of the people in the river either have a drug addiction or a mental problem, and so without correcting those problems, the success rate is very low. So it, but I think, you know, applying for the grant is a step in the right direction. And the other thing was, there are people living out of their vehicles in this city, and the city has kind of squeezed them to not do that. Even Walmart is no longer allowing them to park in their lot. So there's a problem because they can't afford an apartment, but they live out of their car. And maybe we could find a way to find a parking place for those people.
Thank you. Welcome.
Should we give this card to someone?
Hi, my name is Chris Parker Kennedy, and this is my husband, John. And we're here because we've been here before, but we are such strong supporters of Echo, and we work as volunteers there quite a bit. And so we feel like we are in a good position to be aware of the good work that they do, and how important the work is that is going on. There's an old Latin expression that I kind of try to live by, ubi caritas, where charity and love are, there God is. And so I'm not trying to advocate religion, but to say that charity and love are present throughout the philosophy and the work of Echo. We see that every single day, and we have a long list of names of people that we have met there who we try to remember so that we can call them by name and let them know that they are respected and that they have the right to be there and that they matter. And that is what ECHO does. So we are members of two meal teams that Wendy was mentioning of volunteers, and we know how important that program is. Tonight we came from having served 125 people with our other friends here, and that's a significant amount of people who are being helped. And I don't understand the previous speaker's complaints because they are addressing the problem. We're working as a community. We're working really hard to address the problem. It's not easily solved, but that's what needs to be addressed, and that's what ECHO's doing. So the possibility of having a kitchen is thrilling. We could have a sink. We could have a stove. All these things that are not there right now, we just have a table and people bring in all their food. To have a real working kitchen would be amazing. And I think it would bring in more volunteers and it would bring in more people who could be helped. So we're all for it, and we just can't say enough about the good work that is going on in our community. So thanks.
Well, thank you for your work and service to others through ECHO. Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Dawn Pentney, and I want to give a special thanks to Steve Gregory because we wouldn't have an ECHO shelter without him. So thank you for that. I don't think you can talk to anyone about drugs or homelessness until you feed them. Because if someone's hungry, you can't talk to them. You have to feed them first, because that's one of our basic needs. So I want to show you something. This is a pan that you would use in your oven, right? So you have three racks in your oven. So three of these fits in your oven, but three of these do not feed 140 people. You need five of these to feed 140 people. Now, if anyone wants to volunteer their oven, I'm two meal teams. One was tonight and one is a week from tonight. I could always use an extra oven. So when it gets near mealtime, my friends don't return my calls because they know I'm gonna ask to use their oven. The other thing is, when we're out there cooking, we have a stack of paper plates, right? And the wind comes up, and you know the wind in Paso, we feed at 5 o'clock, all those plates are blowing around, right? So the dust is blowing in people's food. They deserve better than that. They really do deserve. I mean, we cook a lot of times, it takes 2 days to prepare these meals, and we serve them hot, we make sure they're hot. We make sure, tonight we did pulled pork sandwiches. We cooked 53 pounds of pork, probably about 20 pounds of coleslaw, 2 cases of oranges, 200 brownies. What else did we have? I think that was it. But anyway, I don't think we can get anywhere with the homeless population until we feed them and we keep them fed. I don't think we're gonna make any inroads with their drug problems and their homelessness and anything else without feeding these people. And you know, the other thing is JPK and Chris and me and a couple of the meal teams, we know these people. So when they're having a bad day, we can go up and go, hey, are you having a bad day? And we might be the only people who really care about them. So, oh, and a shout out to Wendy. Wendy Lewis is a fabulous leader, and we are so lucky to have her in our community. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Marcella, and I was an ECHO client. I lived there for 2 years with my son, slept in our car, and everything. So I've been through the program. It's an amazing program. I came here today because I want to speak on this because this is something huge to me. Doing a kitchen would be able to help ECHO and feeding people. I stayed at ECHO back in 2021 with my son Noah. We were homeless at the time and needed help. We got into the 90-day program, worked hard, got the job that I'm still at today. And I got into housing. So with the housing and everything, it's been amazing. I've been in my own place for 2 years already. And I'm grateful and thankful for that. It was hard in the beginning, wanted to throw in the towel, but I kept up. And just being at Echo really helped me. Their services are great. But my passion, my heart and my passion was giving back to the community and volunteering. I still go to Echo. I do make meals and prepare meals for everybody there. I do lunches on my days off. I'm out there on top of my hood of my car feeding people out there. I've been asking for them to look into getting a kitchen because this would help everybody. And I think that would be a great opportunity with this grant or whatever they're planning to do with this money to get this kitchen going and feeding and helping keeping the meals warm, because that's what it's about out there. And just hearing all this and everybody and their comments and everything, a lot of people has never been there. And to be there, it's really rough. And addiction, it's hard. And I'm just grateful for Echo. And I would really like this to happen, and I would still volunteer here and everything. I wrote something, but I didn't even go off of that because I'm just speaking out of my heart, you know? And
well, thank you for your success story and sharing it with us, Marcella.
And thank you for like letting me speak out here, because it means a lot to me. And I told myself I was not going to cry, but I read this so many times to my coworkers, and I cried a few times because I know how it is, and I just think that this would be good and enhance the services that they do. So please pass this. We need that, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi, my name's Linda Stewart. I've been a meal provider at Echo for almost a decade now, first in Atascadero, and now I serve up in Paso as well. And I was so excited because I'm constantly like, oh, we need a kitchen. We need a, how can we get it? So we need the kitchen because, and you're talking about the pipeline, Echo's dinner is the beginning. When they come and they see the people who are in the program, and they hear about their possible opportunities, and they get that warm meal, and one of the meal servers, you know, smiles at them and says, have a good day, they just feel respected and important again. I know Wendy mentioned the weather. It's really hard to find volunteers who want to come out and serve meals when it's 108 degrees outside. So having that dining room and having that indoor kitchen and the additional meeting space would really mean a lot to the volunteers who come out 365 days a year to serve dinner. Dinner at Echo is not just about food. It's about providing a safe and welcoming environment. Right now, without the dedicated kitchen, meal teams have to get creative about how to keep food warm. I know we wrap things in towels and put them in insulated bags and hope that they stay warm. And with an oven and accessible electrical outlets, we can hook up crock pots and things like that that would really streamline our process and ensure that guests have nutritious meals. The meal program is most vital part of Echo. It's where individuals first experience kindness and the possibility of change in their lives. In this space, they can meet with case managers and learn about the various programs available.